Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about the lore in the games of Blizzard Entertainment. Today, it's a different game, and I'm so excited about this. I'm Ann Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers from Blizzard Watch, and I've got one of the regular co-hosts with me today, and that would be Matt Rossi. Say hi, Rossi.
Hi, Rossi. It's an old joke, but it's a good joke.
Hey, you might as well. It's a classic. We like classics here.
The only thing left is releasing Krakens, so...
Joe was unable to make it today due to a last-minute thing, but that's okay because we're actually recording a day later than usual. So to fill in for Joe, and mostly because of what we're talking about today, we brought in Mitch. So, Mitch, say hello.
Hi, Rossi.
No.
Hello.
You can't do it. She didn't...
That's not what I was going for. But all right, then. So the reason we've got Mitch in here today, besides the fact that he's available, is also because he's very familiar with the subject that we're talking about. And the reason that we're recording a day late is because yesterday, instead of recording Lore Watch, I was driving across Utah to go to the Overwatch launch event thing where they were showing all of the cinematics and a nice panel on the big screen. And that was a blast. That was fantastic, actually. It was really cool seeing all of them, all of the cinematics on the big screen like that. So today, we're not talking about World of Warcraft at all. We're not talking about the movie. We're not talking about the game. No, we're going to talk about Overwatch because Overwatch just launched today. And I've been dying to talk about this. I really have. So I guess we could just kind of hop right in with it, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Sure. So, lore behind the game, brief rundown of the lore behind the game. We're looking at a future Earth, and in this future Earth, we had this ideal world that was like full of peace, economic harmony, all this other stuff. And a lot of this was fostered by these virtual intelligences, artificial intelligences that were created. They're called Omniks. They're robots. They're robots. They're intelligent robots, but they call them Omniks in this particular version of Earth. At some point in that future, something went horribly wrong, as things are wont to do, and it created this event called the Omnic Crisis. And the Omnic Crisis was basically all of the Omniks turned on humanity and focused, instead of focusing on the good things that they had been focusing on, like monitoring the economy and, you know, fostering peace, all this other stuff, they were dead set on wiping humanity out. The way that the Omniks work, right? There's the Omniks, and then there's these plants that basically produce Omniks. They're called Omniums. Mm-hmm. And those Omniums started cranking out war bots instead of more Omniks, which... It was a global thing. It was a worldwide thing. These Omniums were all over the planet, and all of a sudden, all of them were turning on humanity. So in order to try and combat this threat, the United Nations got together and they founded this secret special organization of the world's best and brightest, and they called it Overwatch. And that's where Overwatch came from. Overwatch managed to get together and take care of the Omnic crisis. The cool part about this, and this is one of those loose threads, and you'll find a lot of these. You'll find a lot of these in Overwatch. It was stated very clearly that they got rid of the source of the threat, but they didn't actually state what that was. So whatever it was that sparked the Omnic crisis to begin with, whatever it was that was the impetus for the Omniums going rogue, that hasn't been revealed yet. And we still don't know what the heck that was. But basically what happened was Overwatch saved the day, and the public eye was just glowing with praise for the team. They could do no wrong. So they kind of changed the game plan a little bit. Obviously, they didn't need to defeat the Omnic crisis anymore. What they did instead was they were trying to foster global peace, and they were also kind of going into science exploration, research, that kind of thing, to kind of get back to that point where it's like, okay, golden age of peace and harmony. And all of a sudden, these rumors started flying about internal corruption and things going wrong. And that opinion of the public eye, which had been so high at that point, went downhill. It was like a downward spiral. And eventually Overwatch was forcibly disbanded. There's more to the story than that, and we will get into that, but that's kind of the basics of it. So Overwatch itself takes place after this whole dissolution and the introduction of the Petrus Act. And the Petrus Act basically said any Overwatch agents doing anything is completely illegal and can be prosecuted, all this other stuff. One of these guys, Winston, who is the giant talking gorilla.
The scientist.
The scientist gorilla. He had enough of looking at the world. Because the thing is once Overwatch was disbanded, the world kind of started falling into disarray again. And bad things are happening all over the place. And Winston was watching all of this and going, I can't let the future turn into this thing. I want to make the future better. That's why we came together to begin with. That's why Overwatch came together to begin with. So he pushed a recall order that pulled back in all of these agents. Now, you may be wondering, because they have been going on for quite a while already, and you may
be
wondering...
There's a lot more, too.
Right, and there's lots that I haven't even touched on, right? But you may be wondering, if you picked up Overwatch today, and you've been playing the game, and you've been having fun swapping between heroes and going pew-pew, and, you know, shooting back and forth, winning games, getting loot crates, leveling up, where is all this story? Where is it all at? It's certainly not in game. You don't see it reflected in combat or anything like that. And that's because Overwatch's approach to story is a very different kind of thing. They've created this universe, and it's this universe with this thriving story. Obviously, I've only like grazed on maybe like the tiniest fraction of it here, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And the game is set in that same universe, but the story and the game are kind of like two separate things that sort of work hand in hand. Heroes that are established in the game are then given stories that work in the overall narrative, but that narrative isn't necessarily something that the game hinges on. They don't hinge on each other. They just work together really organically, which means that the people that are working on the story and the franchise stuff, they are totally free to do these cinematics, to do comics, to do whatever the heck they want to do. And if the game chooses to reflect that, great. If the game doesn't choose to reflect that, doesn't matter. Because
it's still the same game.
It's still the same game, and it's still lots of fun to play. So when I'm talking about all this story stuff, and I think I've spent like the last, couple of months or so, Overwatch, doing Know Your Lores that are themed on Overwatch and the heroes and the history behind those heroes. And the most frequent question that I get is, where is all this information coming from? Where are you getting all of this? And the answer is in the game. If you go to the Overwatch website, each hero has their own little profile with their own little backstory. And if you look at all the backstories and kind of start piecing it together with what you see in game and with the cinematics and with the other material, the promotional material that was released, you start to see this story, and it's a new story. It's a story we haven't seen before, and it's a really cool story. And it's kind of been an interesting exercise, because as I've been writing these Know Your Lores, more new material has been coming out, and points that were kind of blurry when I started writing these are now incredibly clear. So it's kind of cool, because it's like I'm not writing like established history. I'm just sort of dictating things as they're coming out and putting it all together for people, which is kind of fun. So yeah, Overwatch. I'm just going to leave it open right there. Let's talk about Overwatch. Rossi, go.
One of the things I'm liking about this game, since Anne mentioned it, is that essentially it's kind of interesting. You have kind of the fallen group here. Like, Overwatch is kind of a combination of S.H.I.E.L.D., the Avengers, and G.I. Joe. If you remember the G.I. Joe cartoon from the 90s. I mean, not the 90s. Yeah, it was the 90s. 80s and 90s.
Late 80s, early 90s, yeah.
It's got elements of all of them. It definitely feels superhero-y. I mean, you've got Tracer, who is essentially a superhero. You've got Widowmaker, who is a science experiment gone wrong. You've got Reaper, who's essentially walking rot. He's like walking decay. You've got Soldier 76. I can't pronounce the colon. I'm sorry. Who is essentially he's like a weird mishmash of Cable and the Winter Soldier with Captain America's origin, kind of. There's a lot of interesting stuff. It's a very, I don't want to say bright because that implies that there's no dark to it, but it's a very, like, it's vivid color palette, the game. Like, every character seems to embody something that's very larger than life. I'm looking at Torbjorn's bio right now. You've got him, he's the crazy weapons designer type, and he's out to right, you know, the wrongs of when Overwatch fell. He's trying to recover, like, the technology that got stolen, because he built most of it. He's the guy who, when the Omnic crisis happened, they came to him and said, we need weapons that can take these things out. And he's like, yeah, I never trusted robots anyway. Sure, I'll help you. And so he made all these incredible weapons. And now with Overwatch gone, those weapons are falling into the wrong hands. They're falling into Talon's hands, for instance. Talon being a criminal organization, it's kind of like Cobra, if you remember G.I. Joe. It's very similar. Or Hydra, if you watch.
I'm thinking about this, right? Because the whole methodology behind Overwatch's downfall, what happened was there were these rumors going around about internal corruption and that kind of thing, how Overwatch was like doing these terrible things, and that kind of served to bring them down. But the other half of what brought them down was the fact that Jack Morrison, he wasn't the leader originally. He was the second in command, and then he was promoted to leader after the successful prevention of the Omnic crisis, that, you know, once that had been resolved in Overwatch's favor, in the world's favor, Jack Morrison was promoted. Gabriel Reyes, who was the original, he wasn't really the official commander. He was just
the field guy.
He had seniority, basically, and they're like, well, you have seniority, so we're going to, you know, kind of put you in pseudo command.
Yeah, he had that kind of pseudo command thing going, but he got passed over in favor of Morrison for that promotion to the leadership position. Reyes was also involved with Blackwatch, which we haven't heard a lot about, but I believe that's going to be part of what goes on with the graphic novel that's coming out. Blackwatch was basically Overwatch's special ops unit, and it had a few different members. Notable members include McCree, and of course Reyes. He was the leader of Blackwatch.
They kind of did the stuff that Overwatch couldn't really do legally, or, you know, with much public attention.
They were
Black Ops.
They were Black Ops. They weren't really
knowledge of your mission will be disavowed, and, you know, if you're caught, sort of stuff.
They were like the specters of the Overwatch.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I wasn't sure if I could go there or not, but yeah, that's totally what I was thinking.
It's fine. It's free game. We're just flying off the cuff here. But
gave
what
Soldier
I'm
76 there, a biotic grenade, for God's sake.
Right. What I'm saying here, though, is that there was this feud going on between Reyes and Morrison, and that all kind of exploded in the very literal sense at Overwatch's Swiss headquarters and supposedly killed the both of them. And they have both since returned. Well, Reyes, now working under the moniker Reaper, and as Rossi was saying, he's like living rot. It's really kind of cool. He's been systematically trying to bring down Overwatch, and it kind of makes me wonder if we're going to go with the whole Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Captain America thing on Soldier 76 aside. Can we look at Talon and Reyes as like the Hydra?
It definitely feels that way to me.
Was he initially like infiltrating this organization? Was he trying to tear it down in the first place?
See, that's an interesting thing,
because
right now
all along.
We don't really know much about Talon. We just know, for instance, we know Talon was instrumental in Widowmaker's creation. Mm-hmm. And we know that they've been, you know, running around doing evil stuff. It certainly seems likely that Talon is involved in the rumors of corruption that led to the dissolution of Overwatch in the first place, because it seems like Overwatch's dissolution is ultimately part of a long-range plan. You want to get these guys out of the way. What gets me is, too, is one of the things that's happening at the same time all this is happening in Russia, one of the Omniums is reactivated.
Yeah, okay, so that's something, we didn't go over before. Russia, they basically stood on their own during the first Omnic crisis. They built, wasn't it, they countered robots with bigger robots, essentially, the first
they
time around?
Giant mechas.
And yeah.
If you're playing Overwatch right now and you go into Volskaya, you can actually see those mechs. I'm not even going to try and pronounce the name. It is very long, complicated Russian, and there's just no way I'm going to wrap my tongue around that. I'm not sure
how
to do it.
Fun fact, one of the mechs in the background will dance if you watch it long enough.
Yeah, which is kind of cool. But basically what happened was the UN was going, oh, we need to like work together to figure out this Omnic crisis thing. And Russia said, nah, we got this ourselves. And they did.
They did.
They actually ended their own Omnic crisis themselves without Overwatch, and whatever they did, and the mechs played a large part in that, whatever they did to shut it down, apparently it wasn't a permanent solution, because there is now a second Omnic crisis looming just in Russia. It's that Russian Omnium that is suddenly reactivated, and it's the Omnic crisis part two.
And we should also point out the Omnics are not, they're not all united in terms of what they want to be doing or how they want to be pursuing their existence even after the crisis. There's an entire order of like monks that want to, like, for lack of a better word, live in peace.
They're very humanized robots. I mean, there's obviously the like sentry units, but a lot of the Omnics are like Zenyatta.
Yeah, Zenyatta's a member of that organization. He's a member.
Yeah,
who's
the one that got shot?
Mandata.
Mandata, right? Yeah.
He was like the kind of the Nelson Mandela of robots.
Yeah.
Or the Dalai Lama of robots. I'm not sure. Maybe a little bit of both. He getting assassinated was a big deal because it helped amp up tensions between them. If you watch the Hero trailer, the one that just came out, the Soldier 76 trailer, one of the things you see is casual violence towards Omnics. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that trailer is supposed to be taking place. I don't know if it's supposed to be Mexico.
That's Dorado.
Okay. But I know that, you know, casual violence towards Omnics, they were beating they're beating an Omnic with hammers and baseball bats, and they even tried to get a small girl to participate. So yeah, it's hostility towards Omnics is very high, which is why Bastion's one of my favorite characters. Because Bastion is essentially Kane from Kung Fu, if you were a robot. Even though he's not a martial arts guy, that's Zenyatta. But Bastion is like wandering the world just trying to, you know, live with birds.
He reminds me a lot of Wally, to be honest.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's what I see when I see Bastion. Your mileage may vary, but
Wally, if Wally was like, you know, really good at killing people.
Exactly.
What's interesting about Bastion is that Bastion, that's not his individual name. The Bastion units, they were actually an Omnic unit that were created for peacekeeping purposes, mm-hmm. and they weren't intended for warfare. But when that Omnic crisis started up, the Bastion's ability to reconfigure themselves, that was kind of made to create this assault cannon mode, and they were turned into these weapons of war.
Anyone who's played the game, even like one match of the Bastion, knows this knows what this is.
You know what's going on. So what happened was, after the Omnic crisis was over with, Overwatch went through, and they dismantled the Bastion units. They took them down. They took them all down except for one. There was one that we know of. There may be more. I don't know. But one of them survived off by himself and was decommissioned and was just sitting there in a field. And then one day it woke up. And when it woke up with the peacekeeping programming, that combat programming that they had all been given during the Omnic crisis, that was gone. It will kick in. That combat programming will kick right back in if that Bastion unit thinks that it's in danger. But really, it's much more interested in just kind of figuring out how to communicate and looking at the world and learning about the world and what it is. And I like Bastion. I think Bastion's great.
I like him as a character. I hate him in a game.
Oh, he's a good character. I've only got to play Overwatch in the beta, and when I played in the beta, I was one of the people that Bastion was made to kill. Like, I didn't know enough about Bastion is made basically. I think someone described Bastion as a raid boss. I think it was Anne actually who described him as a raid boss.
Somebody on my Twitter feed mentioned it. Because I was talking about Bastion, and they said, yeah, Bastion is like the raid boss of the game. If you can defeat him once, then you've got him on farm, and he's easy. You just have to figure out how to defeat him. Which, by the way, Hanzo Widowmaker Genji. Thank you. You're welcome. Take that. Use it.
Well, what gets me too is Hanzo. We've got Bastion as like an example of an Omnic who is not... I don't even know if he talks. Like, you know,
he doesn't. He doesn't have any way to communicate, really.
Then you've got Zenyatta, who is an example of the monastic order after the Omnic crisis, and he basically is much more of a thinker. He's consumed with basically the Omnics have the problem of being artificial beings.
Right.
They're machines, but they can think, and they have like a philosophy. So this monastic order has a philosophy about what it means to be what they are.
It was interesting because this group, it was after the Omnic crisis, and this group of Omnics just kind of like withdrew from society and established this group up in the Himalayas called the Shambhali. Mm-hmm. And they were led by Mandata, Tekartha Mandata, who sat down with them, and they all kind of sat and contemplated the puzzle of their own existence. And the conclusion that they finally came to after years of thinking about this is that they were more than artificial intelligence, and they possess souls, like humans.
Does
possess
this unit
souls.
Have a soul?
Yeah, according to Mandata, they do. And there's, you know, humanity and Omnics, they should be living hand in hand. They should be working together, because in the end, as far as the Shambhali are concerned, we're all the same. And Zenyatta was one of the Shambhali group. He didn't quite agree with what was going on, so he left the order. And it was mostly because Mandata and the rest of the Shambhali, they became very, very popular.
Yeah, millions of people around the world were like, yeah, this is great.
If you watch the Tracer Widowmaker short Alive, like, that's the leader that like is showing up.
It is a very important moment.
Yeah, but like you see him and he is, you know, walking out of a car like Hollywood style, or like, I mean, diplomat style, but still, like, there are a lot of people there just to see him, to hear him talk.
Yeah, because that whole message of spiritual equality, it was kind of like embraced, and these Omnics became global celebrities, kind of. And Zenyatta didn't quite agree with the idea of being some kind of celebrity. He just wanted
peace,
spread that word, you know, through deeds and through actions. So he left to go kind of pursue his own path, whereas Mandata was still just trying to spread the word. In Alive, what we witnessed in Alive was the assassination of Tekartha Mandata, which was basically a nail in the coffin of that whole Omnic movement. And that's another one of those things in Overwatch that's kind of, I know, you know, we talk about how it like, it's like this hopeful, optimistic world, but the thing is that the world always needs heroes, right? And mm-hmm. there has to be a reason for it to need heroes. So everything is not perfect. And after that Omnic crisis happened, humanity started looking at these Omnics with really wary, suspicious eyes, because, you know, if you're going to rise up and rebel against humanity once, who's to say you aren't going to do it again? If you're a creature of programming, who's to say nobody's going to hack that system and turn all of you against all of us? You know, so there's a lot of suspicion going on there. And that's where that whole, I know, Rossi, you had mentioned in the Soldier 76 short, they were beating the heck out of an Omnic.
Yeah, they're just trashing him.
They had a baseball bat wrapped in metal plates, and they were wailing on this poor thing.
Yeah.
Also, if you watch the Hanzo Genji short,
mm-hmm.
there seems to be a certain amount of revulsion towards cybernetic enhancement.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, you get to a certain point, and it's like, are you still human, or are you an Omnic? What are you?
Yeah.
Is it even you anymore?
There's a point in that short where we don't get to see what it is, but Genji removes his helmet.
And you see his eyes, and that's all you can see.
I know. Ugh. I was waiting. That
was my favorite short.
Oh, I think that was a lot of people's. I mean, I love that one. Like, that one was
Dragons
just...
Dragons is very, very good. It's probably the best in pure quality, but I like Heroes better, and I'll explain why if we get a chance to talk about it.
No, yeah, yeah. Please talk about it. Go. Right. I want to hear it.
First off, Heroes gives you a good slice of daily life for people. Not just every, you know, not, it doesn't just show you like Hanzo and Genji being like super badasses. It shows you what it's like to be a child growing up in the world post Omnic Crisis.
It's not a happy world necessarily.
No. Like she goes to just, she's supposed to be going to the store, and she doesn't even get 5 feet before there's like a robot getting beat up and her money gets stolen by people she knows. These are people she knows and they steal from her. And then you get to see Soldier 76 in action, which is cool. But what I like is that despite the fact that he is supposed to be the hard-bitten, grim, you know, on a mission character, he can't stop himself from jumping in and saving
him. he growls at himself, essentially. Yeah.
He's upset with himself for reverting back, but he does revert back. And that's the kind of thing I liked about that short. I liked that it showed you why he isn't just... Like, when he first came out, I remember Alex was talking about him, and Alex said, you know, oh, great, yet another gun guy. But he isn't. He isn't just a gun guy. He's incredibly tired. Like, and you got that sense of he's tired and he's frustrated, and that's where it's coming from. It isn't just, crime is the disease and I'm the cure. It's, why won't the world stay fixed? Did I not tell you that you can't do this anymore? Did we not show you that you can't do this anymore? Now, apparently, I'm just going to have to beat up the entire gang right here on the street because you just won't listen. And I liked that. I liked how he still saves the girl. How he didn't just save her. He gives her back her money thing, which means he paid attention.
The awesome Murloc coin purse.
Yes, which I need one of, please.
But the fact is he always intended to give it back to her. You know what I mean? He'd already
had it because they had already left. The bad guys had left by the time he'd
already
jumps
gotten
in the grenade
it,
or whatever, into the grenade.
He'd gotten it for her already. He was going to go back and give it to her, even though it has nothing to do with his mission.
Yeah.
You know, because Soldier 76 is on this big mission to reveal the truth behind why Overwatch fell. That's his whole motivation. And to see that, you know, he can't stop, you know, I just would love to see a short with him and Tracer because I know she'd drive him crazy. She would
absolutely
drive absolutely at the wall, but because she'd be like, let's go do this heroic thing. And he'd be like,
it'd be like right. Sticking Anne and Alex in a room for a couple hours.
Actually, Alex and I get along very well.
Yeah, they do.
Weirdly.
Well, forcing you to talk about something you don't like.
Oh, well, no, that's actually fun, too. Well, it's fun
You're
for
ruining
me. It's not
my
so
joke.
Much fun for Alex.
But yeah, I really did like it. I think Dragons is really, it's visually amazing. Like it's fun to watch. I think Alive might be the most important of them.
Yeah, like, Alive is my second favorite. And I just, I don't know if there are any files in the game or anything, but I feel like they've hinted at like some history between Widowmaker and Tracer. Like, I don't know exactly, but the way Tracer just says like, "Why are you doing this?" I don't know. That was my favorite moment in that when.
Well, Widowmaker, I don't know if Widowmaker originally worked for Overwatch. Her husband did, Gerard LaCroix. And he was the one who was basically spearheading the hunt for talent and trying to track them down and trying to break them up. They'd already, you know, Overwatch was pretty good at busting up these groups. They had already done so with the Shimada clan. After Hanzo tried to kill Genji and nearly succeeded, they rescued Genji and said, "We will rebuild your body and we will keep you alive if you help us take the Shimada clan down." And of course, Genji's like, "Yeah, I'll help you out. They just straight up tried to kill me. So, hey, what have I got to lose?" You know, so he went ahead and helped them out. Talon, however, was always a thorn in their sides and they were never able to quite successfully drag them down. Gerard was very good at what he did, but he couldn't quite get there. And his wife, Amelie, she was, it was never revealed whether or not she was working for Overwatch or not, but basically Talon kidnapped her. They kidnapped her and they programmed her to be a sleeper agent. And then Overwatch conveniently rescued her and brought her home. And she seemed to be okay until one night she murdered Gerard while he was sleeping.
At least we think that's what happened.
flat out murdered him while he was sleeping, and then returned to Talon, at which point Talon said, good job, let's go ahead and make you even better.
So here's a tinfoil hat, I guess. Mm-hmm.
If we're going to talk about your theory that he's still alive, I'm going to kill you.
No, not that theory. The theory,
that's a theory I'm playing with.
The theory that Talon, you know, what Reaper's involvement with Talon was before he was Reaper. Now, when she got back to Overwatch, they ran scans on her neurological signs and said, you know, she's totally fine. Did they mess up and miss something, or was it sabotaged by Reaper, you think?
That's a good question. See, that's the thing about Reyes is because we don't have a lot of background on Reyes and what went on, like the beef between Morrison and Reyes. We just have a lot of hearsay at this point. The graphic novel supposedly is going to shed some light on that whole situation, but whether or not it's actually going to reveal all of these details, we don't know yet. There's a lot of Overwatch's story, and I know we're kind of bouncing all over the place as far as the story goes, but there's a lot of pieces to this story, and those mm-hmm. pieces haven't quite been put together yet, and there's deliberate holes here, there, and everywhere. And it's because it's new. It's all brand new. There is no established continuity.
But we have...
There's no established timeline. There's no established... It's all stuff that they're still hammering out as the game is being developed.
But we have all of this, and it came out today.
Yeah.
What gets me too...
Isn't that great?
I love it. It's awesome.
I honestly think one of the things to think about in terms of Talon is it may not actually be a case with Talon as an organization that was sprung up to fight Overwatch. We were talking about the Black Watch before. What happens if the Black Watch is Talon?
Well, that's the fun part, right? Because in the McCree comic that came out, we're going to go back there, the McCree comic that came out, it's called The Train Job, and you can read that for free on Blizzard's website. McCree he's basically hijacking a ride on a train, just going somewhere. We don't know where. By this time, he's already left Overwatch. McCree was a member of Blackwatch, and he saw the infighting and everything else and said, yeah, I'm out. And he left. And he's kind of a mercenary at this point. He's just a gun for hire. But what he inadvertently discovered while he was on this train ride was that the train was being hijacked by Blackwatch agents, or not Blackwatch agents, Talon agents. They had the Talon uniforms on. And as he's looking at them, he goes, they're fighting with Blackwatch's playbook. I recognize that. And at the end of the comic, it doesn't end very satisfactorily, right? There's something that Talon is after. And we never figure out what that thing is because McCree finds it in the train and he just tosses it off the train for them to get. And I think that the reasons for that are twofold. Number one, he's not getting paid for this, so he can't be bothered. He just wants to finish his train ride in peace. Number two, and more importantly, he recognizes that fighting style. And he knows that if these guys know Black Watch fighting tactics, this is not a crew that you want to mess with. Just give them what they want, because there's only one of him, and there's how many of them?
Yeah. So
give them what they want so everybody can get out safe.
The question then... Is Reaper leading Talon? Was he leading Talon before? Is he just teaching Talon Blackwatch
operations? Was Talon that part of Overwatch that was kind of rebelling against Morrison? Did it spring from that? And I don't think it did, because LaCroix was still fighting Talon as he was while Overwatch was a thing. But one has to wonder how much of these stories of internal corruption are actually they're true.
Yeah, and it could be that, you know, Talon was a small group, and then it sort of internally Blackwatch started working with Talon, or they kind of joined forces.
Or if certain members of Blackwatch were playing both sides.
Yeah, exactly.
But one of the things, I mean, we haven't even mentioned Roadhog and Junkrat yet. And
So to get into Roadhog and Junkrat, we have to talk about, the Omnic Crisis, the end of the Omnic Crisis, and what that said for the rest of the world, because their story really reflects that. Anyway, go ahead, Rossi.
Well, Roadhog and Junkrat fought during the Omnic Crisis. They were defending Australia, which is where they're from. And what's interesting, too, is that they essentially, won. I mean, they beat the Omnics. Australia successfully defeated them.
They beat them back, and they kept their land.
And gave them everything that the Omnium in Australia, all the surrounding area, they just gave it back to the Omnix after they beat them.
The Australian government, after the resolution of the Omnic crisis, said, okay, we need to make nice with these robots, so why don't we just give them their home base back as kind of like a tentative peace offering, and we'll give them all that land that's around the Omnium too, because it's not like anybody important is living there or anything.
Yeah, and the problem was that they basically displaced the people who'd been living there, which is...
the people who had spent the last how many years fighting to keep that land, only to have the government just hand it off.
And they basically lost... I mean, this is not a part of Australia that was particularly wanted by anyone. Like, I mean, they describe
it's like
it
the
here
Badlands,
as...
you know.
They describe it here as a large number of the outlands of the Outback's residents, a scattered collection of survivalists, solar farmers, and people who just wanted to be left alone. So it's, you know, it's...
they were eking out a meager living off the land.
So, I mean, and if you're Australian, so I'm sure you're like, you're about
to point
out. It was
mostly uninhabited, but still slightly inhabited.
And I find this fascinating because it's like, on the one hand, it's a proactive government move to try and make peace with the Omnix. On the other hand, they had to go and screw somebody over in the at the same time.
And and they screwed over the people that were fighting the hardest.
So that was a mistake because those people had just spent several years learning how to fight methodical, ruthless, emotionless robot enemies. And now they wanted to fight the Australian government, which they did. They started irradiating the area. They actually nuked an area. They sabotaged the Omnium's fusion core. They went into the Omnium and they basically turned it into a nuclear bomb and set it off. So, yeah.
Destroyed the Omnium.
Yeah.
And blew it sky high, littering, you know, miles around. There's twisted wreckage just kind of like raining from the sky, and the whole place is irradiated.
Yeah, and that's when Roadhog basically comes to be. Before that, he still had a chance to be a somewhat sane individual, but watching everything he'd ever fought for turn into an atomic wasteland,
And it wasn't just the fact that it had turned into an atomic wasteland. It was the fact that he had spent all of this time fighting so hard for this tiny, insignificant existence out there in the middle of nowhere. And he fought to hang on to it. And he fought harder than probably anyone else out there to hang on to it. And just when he thought he had it, did he lose it to the Omnix? No, he lost it because the government said, yeah, you don't matter. We're just going to take your land and give it to these guys that you've been fighting. So it puts him in this kind of like almost a sympathetic position. It's no wonder he went a little nuts, you know?
These two characters, like, at first you're like, oh, wow, those are, you know, creepy robber dudes.
Maniacs.
Yeah, maniacs, exactly.
You think that they're comic relief, but when you really look at their story, it's kind of sad.
Yeah. And, like, you know, Junkrat, someone I think was pointing this out in the queue, he's, like, you know, one of the first, like, major, at least Blizzard characters that has, like, you know... he actually is missing a leg. He has a disability because of that explosion, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, it took off his... he lost his leg, and now he's, like, scrapped together with parts because he had to be a Junkrat and fix himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he's... how old is he? Like, he's not that old, right?
I don't remember. I don't remember how old he is. I do know that he was one of not very many survivors that survived that explosion. Yeah. And, yeah, he lost his leg. Presumably from that explosion. But what happened was that group of survivors, they went a little crazy between the radiation and between witnessing that land that they had spent all that time fighting for. Nobody can use it now. Doesn't matter.
Also, there's supposedly apparently some kind of secret in the Omnium that they discovered.
Right. But what they ended up doing was... This group of survivors, they kind of banded together and called themselves the Junkers. And all they do is scavenge. They scavenge the land for parts and they sell those parts for money. That's how they make their living now, because that's all they can do now.
Because they lost everything.
Yeah. And yeah, he was... Junkrat wasn't really... I mean, he was really skilled with explosives, but that was like the only notable trait about the guy. We don't really know much about who he was before he became a Junker. He discovered something in the Omnium, and whatever it was, his fellow Junkers, along with a lot of very highly influential people, all wanted their hands on it. And he became the target of bounty hunters, gangs, mercenaries, everybody was looking to get what he had found, what he'd accidentally stumbled on. So he met up with Roadhog and said, hey, we'll do a 50-50 split if you can keep me alive. Yeah. And Roadhog said,
and then they formed the best friends ever.
And then they became the best friends ever, and they're kind of like the Timon and Pumbaa of Overwatch.
they kind of are. Unless you start feeling really sympathetic for them, they still kind of fall in that bad guy.
Oh, they're category. Maniacs. They are.
Yeah, they fall in the bad guy category of the game. But are they actually part of Talon or Overwatch or anything like that?
No.
They're just...
No.
Okay. But there's no indication that they might be working with
Talon. Caught in the crossfire. That's all.
They're basically like, they're sympathetic to a point, but when they blow up an entire street, you know, to...
Well, yeah.
You know, it becomes hard to sympathize with them too much. And but there's lots of shades of gray in the game. I mean, like, there's Symmetra and the corporation she works for.
Yeah. I was just wondering, like, if maybe the thing that they found is something that Talon would be after.
It's probably something everybody's after. It might even explain what the Omnic Crisis was. Why did it happen? Because that's something we don't know.
It might be the key to unraveling what caused the Omnic Crisis to begin with.
Yeah, and how did Overwatch stop it? I mean, Overwatch stopped it, but how did they stop it? We don't know.
They stopped it temporarily, that's how.
But there's characters like Zarya, who Zarya doesn't really, you don't really have to talk much about her, but she's cool. And yeah. I like the idea that she was basically going to be this like athletic hero. And then the second Omnic Crisis started up and she's like, nope, going back to fight. So that's what her whole deal is.
She grew up, she was born and raised and grew up in the fallout from that initial Omnic Crisis. So the place that she grew up in Russia was kind of a wasteland of sorts. And it was, you know, she grew up with the example of what the Omnic Crisis could do around her constantly. And she kind of like vowed that she was going to be strong. And she was, and she still is. But yeah, when push came to shove and the second Omnic Crisis started rising up, her immediate thought was, we can't have that happen again. I've already seen what it does once. So she noped out of the tournament that she had signed up for and went to go fight. And that's her story. It's, you know, she's got like a small story in terms of the rest of this. But what's interesting is that Russia did manage to defeat the Omnic Crisis once completely on their own. They didn't need Overwatch to do it. So was Overwatch really necessary? Yes and no, I guess. I don't know.
Well, here we are, you know. We'll notice that the Russians, however they beat it, didn't beat it very permanently.
They didn't beat it in a permanent kind of way. But yeah, the thing about Overwatch, and they discussed this, the event that they had yesterday, they showed all of the cinematics, yes, and then they also showed a really lengthy panel on the lore and the story development of Overwatch. And one of the things that they talked about was they talked about the fact that there aren't really any clear-cut black and white heroes and villains in the game. It's all kind of nebulous. And they kind of leave it up in the air and nebulous. Someone like Reaper, yeah, you know Reaper is a bad guy because he seems to be a bad guy, but what were his origins and what took him there? You don't know what that is. But there are other characters, and they mentioned Symmetra specifically. And I find Symmetra really interesting because a lot of people, they mentioned this in the panel too, a lot of people don't associate Symmetra with a villain. Like they don't look at her and say, oh, that's a villain character, because it's not clear cut. And she's not clear cut, although she would like to be. She would like the whole world to be very organized and efficient. And that's why she works with the Vishkar Corporation. They took her in when she was a kid because she was really gifted. And they taught her how to work with hard light technology. And it's kind of interesting because the Vishkar Corporation, their whole interest is supposedly in rebuilding the world, using this technology to rebuild the world. But what we have quickly discovered, and you can see evidence of this in the Symmetra comic, is that there are certain parts of the world that they just really don't care about so much as others.
They're going to save humanity.
Yeah, but only certain parts of the good ones, or what they deem good. You know, there's a process. And yeah, Symmetra herself is very much... She's
part of that,
focused on this idea of order and organization, and it doesn't necessarily jive with what the world really is. And they mentioned that they've kind of like pitted Symmetra and Lucio against each other, because Lucio is very much
interesting. He got his like,
he's the people's person.
He got his tech from one of their factories, right?
Yeah.
What's really interesting, too, is that both they're also thematically opposites in that her powers are based on hard light technology and his is all sound.
Yeah.
So they set them up as, like, you know, thematic opposites. Not opposites, because light and sound aren't opposites, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, different kinds of waves. Yeah.
And I'd kind of speculated that perhaps the two met or at least encountered each other in Rio de Janeiro in the Know Your Lore that I wrote. And then the Symmetra comic came out after that, and it did verify that, yeah, Symmetra was there. She was there during that whole event. Lucio didn't make an appearance in her comic, but you saw what was going on, and you understood where Lucio was coming from just by association. It was like, oh, he was one of those guys. The ones that, like, got completely stomped on. And Symmetra does have, like, a few moments where she's thinking about, you know, is this method of order really the best way? Is what the Vishkar Corporation, is that the best way to go about things? And she's not quite sure, but she's still doing what they want anyway.
Because she doesn't been convinced it's not the right yet.
Right. So you don't know, really. Is she going to be a hero? Is she going to be a villain? Or is she just going to kind of ride the line in between? You know?
Back to the black and gray, since you guys reminded me.
Yeah.
Mercy's another really interesting one. She's not like as openly gray as like the Symmetra story, but her dialogue with Reaper is super interesting because it kind of... There's the implication that, you know, after Reyes died in the explosion, she maybe had a part in bringing him back, and that's why he's this, like, walking decay.
I talked about this in the last Know Your Lore that I did, and that dialogue, for the record, when she's talking to Reaper, she says, "What happened to you?" And he just says, "You tell me, Doc." And then later on, she says, "This is not what I intended for you, Reyes." And he says, "You knew exactly what you were doing."
Which, like, Reyes...
What?
Right, like, Reyes and Morrison, maybe they both died. Maybe Morrison didn't actually die. But it sounds like Reyes... To me, Reyes had it worse. And Mercy had to do some kind of crazy stuff to bring him back. But she was okay with it. Cause...
Well, I mean, you already know that she's willing to go further than most doctors. Because she's the one that fixed Genji up.
Yeah.
She rebuilt him from scratch. And
what she did to Genji is most people would be like, oh, that's getting kind of omnic, isn't it?
Well, you saw Hanzo's reaction to it. He was like, what happened to you? The interesting part about Mercy is that she was recruited. She was recruited like after the omnic crisis was over with. And she was like this brilliant, brilliant medical person who had worked her way up to like the head of surgery at this prominent hospital in Switzerland, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what she did was she pioneered a breakthrough in the field of applied nanobiology. So basically little bits that go and fix things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, because we knew going in that Gabriel Reyes, the common link between Gabriel Reyes and Jack Morrison is that they were both part of a super soldier program in the U.S.
Enhanced program.
It's an enhanced soldier program. It's still hush hush what happened to them, and nobody really knows what the full effects of that were or anything like that. It was part of a program that they were in, and there were some kind of genetic enhancement type things going on, but it was all classified, and it's still classified. Nobody knows exactly what that was. I'm wondering if she worked on the two of them. I'm wondering if she did something to the two of them at some point during their career. Obviously, she had to have done something to Reaper.
Yeah.
And
before or after his like alleged death?
They describe one of the things they describe in the Reaper thing is they talk about his victims look pale, drained, and like their cells are disrupting.
Right.
And they say a thing about how it seems like his cells are regenerating and disrupting constantly.
Yeah.
It seems to me like since she's an expert in nanobiology, that she could be behind that.
Right.
Like basically,
I think she is.
And the reason I think that what I think she might have done is she might have tried something that was supposed to just regenerate him. And instead, he needs to basically do that to people to regenerate himself.
Yes. Part of, you know, in game, when he kills someone, there's like fragments of their, I don't know if it's soul fragments or something, but like he takes health from his enemies, too. So it's something that's possibly represented in the actual gameplay too.
I think that it's possible what he's got is effectively a nano cloud that is rebuilding his body constantly, but
he needs
to. That's
what that black cloud is that's following him around.
And he needs to use it on people to get raw materials, for lack of a better word. He needs to replace his destroyed cells.
Which is so creepy.
Yeah.
And it's just so cool.
Look at that, like, and think about what's the deal with Morrison then? What is Morrison's augmentation? What is, you know, he has that visor that allows him to aim preternaturally
and
well.
That's not something he had when he was Morrison. That's the Soldier 76 thing. So my question is, like, he was obviously augmented before when he was in Overwatch.
Dude can take a grenade. After? He can take a grenade straight up.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't jump on the grenade. He jumped past the grenade and grabbed the little girl knowing and that she wouldn't be hurt. Yeah. Yeah. He knew that would work.
But I'm wondering what augmentations, if any, were made. Like, my theory is that Reaper was definitely, or Reyes was augmented in some way after his death, and that's how he became Reaper. But I'm wondering in what way, if Mercy did something to Morrison as well, to bring him back to life, or if he just didn't die and these are his original augmentations.
Did she bring them back to life is the thing, because when you look at it, Mercy was one of the people that was brought in during that whole the whole trial thing when Overwatch itself was going under trial, and
she didn't like Overwatch totally.
Yeah, she went on the record as saying that there was conflict between Morrison and Reyes, and that she didn't approve of it, but that there was definitely internal conflict going on. So I mean, she didn't like it. She didn't like the fact that they were fighting. So what I'm wondering is, did she take these guys and go, oh, you were part of a soldier enhancement program? Let me poke around your insides and see what they did to you. And let's see how we can make that better. Did she do that? Did that backfire when they died, air quotes, and make them into what they are? Or did she find them after they died, air quotes, and rebuild them, much like she rebuilt Genji? Was that her trying to play God after they died?
I'm leaning towards that one, because
was it the fallout of something that she did when she was playing God before they fell apart? What was it?
I don't know, but like, her whole thing, her ultimate, is that she resurrects heroes.
Yeah.
Anna was saying, you know, her line is, heroes never die. And then she says, like, kind of quietly, for a price.
No, she only does that if she's got the imp skin on.
Oh, okay. It's only with the
imp skin. It's part of the, it's flavor for the imp skin. That's not lore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Then,
what gets me to is that Mercy is using the suit Mercy is using. The power
suit.
Armor.
Yeah.
It's similar to the one Pharah is using.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Pharah's suit is a much more aggressive combat-oriented suit, whereas Mercy's is a healer-oriented suit, which suits her, because that's what she does, is monkey around with nanobiology.
Yeah, and she actually developed that suit. It's a Valkyrie swift response suit, and she developed that specifically so that you could get doctors to the front lines to respond to people faster.
So I find myself wondering how much of that will come up in terms of what is the secret of the base that Pharah is responsible for.
And
because we're only told that Pharah is responsible for a base that is so important that it isn't just the region, but it's the whole world. Security is in play, is involved in this place. So.
I'm dying to know what's up with Mercy. She has not gotten a story told yet. Nope. And I'm hoping that she comes out with the next batch of cinematics that they do. Because they did say after they released the Soldier 76 short, they said that it was the last of the four shorts for this season. Which implies that they're doing more. So going to do more, what I want to know is, if they're going to do more of these, whose stories do you guys want to see told?
Ooh.
I'm kind of going to say Pharah, both because I want to know what the deal is with that secret location that she's guarding. And Pharah is interesting because she never was in Overwatch. She was supposed to be in Overwatch, and then Overwatch collapsed. So
her mom
was
in Overwatch.
Her mom was.
Promo images, when you see somebody that looks like Pharah, that's not Pharah. That's Farrah's mom.
So you get the family legacy. You've got the connection where she was supposed to get to join and she didn't. And you've got the, you know, jumped up suit of armor she wears. And then you've got the secret, like, you know, the secret base in Egypt that she's the security head for, and how it's affecting the whole world security. There's a lot there you could do with Pharah. So I'm going to say Pharah.
I definitely Mercy. I want more on Reaper. Reyes, like, I want more on Talon, I guess.
Both he and Talon have kind of been the accessories in everybody else's stories.
Exactly. And
they haven't gotten their own dedicated material yet. Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, I'm looking for his own dedicated.
Okay. Personally, Mercy, yes, absolutely. I kind of want to see more about her. Reinhardt, we got the Reinhardt comic that kind of explained what he was doing, but we didn't really get much on Reinhardt in particular, like while he was with Overwatch. And honestly, I want to see those moments, like where Overwatch was falling apart. I want to see that whole, what was it that led to Overwatch's downfall?
The explosion?
Right, right. That final encounter between Morrison and Reyes, where they were fighting, what happened there. And then I want to see more Hanzo and Genji stuff just because it was really, really cool.
Yeah.
I'd love to see the content. You know, if you're going to bring in a Mercy story, bring in the Mercy story where she rebuilds Genji. I want to see that moment. That would be interesting. I would like to see that. His origin. Yeah?
Yeah. I was talking with someone and he mentioned wanting to see Hanzo take up the sword again because he put the sword down.
Anything with Hanzo is good, as far as I'm concerned.
To see a Hanzo and Genji sword fight.
Only if Genji gets to shoot him with a bow.
Genji can do whatever he wants.
But yeah, if we're going like for, you know, absolute fantasies, quite frankly, I would like to see Soldier 76. Like an actual, why does he think he's doing? What is he actually going out? He was a member of the American Soldier Enhancement Program. What does that mean? What are his physical capacities exceeding those of an unconventional soldier? Has he been amplified up since? Or is it all tech? He's got, quote-unquote, a cutting-edge arsenal, which he stole from Overwatch facilities, like the Black Mesa base.
But that arsenal isn't going to protect him from a flat-out grenade blast to the back.
No, but like his visor thing, like is his visor built into him or is it just tech that he got after he came back from death?
Well, he's got a really big scar on his face. I don't think he died. I'll straight up say this. And I think it would be interesting. At some point, we're going to find out what really happened. My money is on neither Reyes nor Morrison were responsible for that explosion.
I'm going to guess that they weren't responsible, but Reyes did die.
No. Reyes probably did die, but here's the thing. I honestly think Reyes has been set up to become Reaper.
You think?
And I think there's going to turn out to be like a whole much more complicated thing going on with Talon and what they're all about and the Omnic Crisis and what really started it. And I think we're just barely beginning to see. Like, and I'm not saying Reyes isn't a bad guy now or that he wasn't an asshole. You know, sorry. he wasn't a jerk then, but I definitely feel like the setup is bigger and more elaborate than we're getting. And the reason I think that is because something reactivated the Russian Omnium. Something mm-hmm. turned it back on. What did that? What started the crisis in the first place? And what could reactivate the Omnium? You're going to tell me the Russians didn't do everything in their power to make sure that thing would never come back on?
After I mean, they were like boastful about it. Like, look, we didn't need you guys. We did it ourselves.
We didn't need the rest of the world. We're Gilneas.
Yeah.
Polished.
Oh, God.
Suddenly the Russians are all werewolves. No, I really do think, I mean, I feel like there's more going on, and I think that the Omnic Crisis and Talon and all of it is kind of a set piece. Like, Overwatch was a panic response to a huge crisis, but who would benefit from the Omnic Crisis in the first place if not the Omnics? Like, what if this was the exact outcome they wanted? I definitely think we're going to see a lot more.
Yeah, and we kind of need to wrap it up here because I think we actually went over time, but it doesn't matter. Overtime. Anyway.
Overtime.
So what we can gather from this is that Overwatch's story is potentially huge. And I've said this before already, but there are a lot of blank spaces and there are a lot of areas that still have not been filled in. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Now that the game is out and launched as of today, it's going to be interesting to see where they take the story from here. Are they going to keep filling in origin stories or are they going to carry that story forward? And are they going to continue doing that kind of independent of the game and let the game exist as its own thing? I loved how they talked in the panel they talked about how a lot of the areas that eventually became maps and things like that were stuff that the story team had talked about as settings for whatever story they were working on. And then the game people looked at that and said, yeah, let's use that. Or the game people said, I have an idea for an area. And they said, oh, we got an idea for a story. They'll, you know, they work together. They're very organic. They work hand in hand with each other instead of the game being first, being established, being this big thing, and you having to kind of construct the story around it.
I can't wait to see, like,
some... I want to see what they do from here. I'm really interested.
Yeah, I want, well, like, one of the things you've mentioned, at least in your post and even here, I think, is that it's great that they don't have to work together.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited to see the examples of when they do. Like, if we get, you know, say we get something that's not an origin story, maybe not soon, but eventually we get something, you know, that adds more to a character, or like, you know, is a cinematic short where someone's in like a firefight or something, a skin added to the game that reflects that, or a new map to reflect, you know, a new location of a short. Something like that, I'm really looking forward to. Just
we're probably going to see more of that. If they add, if they decide to add more heroes and more other stuff, that's the way we're going to see it. It's going to be like an organic kind of thing.
Is there any organic explanation for why Soldier 76 has an Evel Knievel outfit?
No, it just looks cool.
Okay.
Well, he thinks it looks cool. Look, he's elderly. You have to give him...
He's Metzen's 90s baby.
You have to give him a pass on some things. He's
I just like to
up
imagine,
there in years.
I like to imagine that that's what he wore when he was the original Overwatch. When they were first fighting the Underground, that's what he went out there.
He crawled out of the wreckage, took a good look at the world, decided he needed to tackle it again, and he pulled out that old jacket from way back when. He slid it on his shoulder.
From, 1976.
He pulled it on, and he looked in the mirror, and he's like, yeah, that still looks good. Regardless of whether the rest of the world thinks so or not, he thinks it's still cool, so it's still cool. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. If you have the question for Lore Watch, you can go ahead and email us at podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Just put Lore Watch in the tagline, and we'll know that it's for this show and not one of the other shows that we also cover. We're fair game for Overwatch questions. If we've got an answer, we'll give it to you. So feel free to throw those our way, because we might even do, you know, more Overwatch shows at this point. However, with the Warcraft movie just over the horizon, expect to hear about that probably real soon. real soon.
So
like as soon as
happening.
We can get into the theater and look at it soon. I'm not sure what we'll talk about next time. We'll kind of banter back and forth between Joe and Rossi and myself and figure it out. But yeah, if you've got any Overwatch questions about the story or the lore or anything else that's going on with it, shoot those our direction, and maybe we'll just do that the next show. Who knows? Depends on what we get. Thanks for listening, guys. And yeah, Rossi, any last words?
Yeah, but way too many, actually. I was just going to say, we didn't talk much about Tracer.
I know. Or
I'm actually
Winston.
Kind of amazed.
There's a lot of them that we didn't talk about. But
yeah. But Tracer and Winston are kind of big. Like you almost,
they are.
They're almost obligatory.
Yeah.
I'm proud of us that we didn't, actually.
There's so much to talk about. We can't possibly cover it all in an hour. Mitch, you got any last words? Thank you for filling in today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on here. It was really fun. Two, it's high noon.
Okay, that was terrible, but that's all right. We're going to wrap up the show.
That's a good note to end on, then.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We will see you in 2 weeks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyler Tsedis.
Hey,
Kayla Itzinez.
I'm Kayla Itzinez, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.